Ganeshan reviewed for the assembled managers the history of Human Rights Watch. He described why he and other activists believed that oil production hurt poor countries more than it helped them. Energy wealth does not necessarily lead to better standards of living, increased democratic participation in government, or a better climate for human rights. Instead, economic, social, and political conditions may stagnate or even deteriorate. He described the appalling human rights records of the governments that were major oil and gas producers, starting with Saudi Arabia, a business partner of ExxonMobil's in the refinery and chemical industries. The Saudi monarchy, Ganeshan pointed out, executes prisoners, engages in torture, curtails due process rights, and uses barbaric forms of punishment such as amputations and beheadings. Nor was its record unique. 7 members of OPEC, Algeria, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Libya, Qatar, and the UAE, were undemocratic, with poor human rights records and limited economic diversification. 3 others, Indonesia, Nigeria, and Venezuela, were nominally democratic, but plagued with widespread corruption and poor human rights records. New oil exporters such as Angola, Azerbaijan, and Kazakhstan were becoming models of corruption, mismanagement, and human rights violations. ExxonMobil operated in many of these countries and collaborated with the governments Ganeshan found so wanting. He then turned to the reputation of ExxonMobil itself. He had decided not to spare the manager's feelings. I have interacted with ExxonMobil for at least the last 5 years and found them to be hostile and unproductive prior to this current effort, he said. ExxonMobil seemed like an arrogant, opaque company that was hostile to social responsibility and preferred to go its own way. He continued, "This is not just my perception of the company, but shared by every NGO and many others. Several company representatives have come to me over the years and have justified their company's actions or inactions by saying, 'At least we're not ExxonMobil.'" He did finish on a note of aspiration. There was another widespread perception of ExxonMobil, namely, that once it decides to do something, it will do it better than anyone else in its industry. If the corporation would seek to improve its human rights record in a serious way, its leadership in the international oil and gas industry could have very beneficial effects. ExxonMobil should expect, however, a considerable amount of skepticism if it tried to change its ways. Ken Cohen did not invite Ganeshan back to his retreats, but he did not give up on his outreach campaign to Human Rights Watch. ExxonMobil formally signed up to the voluntary principles and gradually began to implement them. Cohen also turned to Bennett Freeman, the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, who had helped conceive the voluntary principles before returning to a corporate consultancy practice. Freeman, too, attended Cohen's offsites at Norwalk. He respected Cohen's professionalism. He regarded himself as a constructive critic of ExxonMobil, but also a sophisticated thinker about corporate responsibility, who was not innately hostile to multinationals. When he appeared at Norwalk conferences or at private opinion leader dialogues with ExxonMobil executives elsewhere, Freeman usually broke the ice by remarking that ExxonMobil's human rights performance reminded him of what a critic once said about the music of Richard Wagner: "It's not quite as bad as it sounds." Over the years, Lee Raymond had told colleagues that he considered Royal Dutch Shell to be Exxon's most formidable competitor. Royal Dutch had weaknesses in Raymond's estimation: a mind-boggling system of split Anglo-Dutch governance, a retirement age of 60 years that created disruptive turnover in corporate leadership, and a thick bureaucracy. Yet Royal Dutch maintained a greater focus on operations and project discipline than many other oil companies, Raymond told his colleagues. Exxon partnered in oil and gas operations with Royal Dutch more than any other company. In comparison, Raymond and other ExxonMobil executives did not hide their disdain for BP. Increasingly, there was a competitive edge to the rivalry. After the dust settled on the big oil merger scramble of the late 1990s, ExxonMobil and BP emerged as the nearest equals in size and global ambition, together at the head of the global rankings for shareholder-owned oil corporations. Raymond had admired one of BP's previous chief executives, David Simon, but he told colleagues that, in general, he found the corporation to be bureaucratic, undisciplined, and unreliable. Raymond was also no Anglophile. ExxonMobil's operations in Britain had frustrated him. The corporation ran refineries and retail gas stations in the United Kingdom under the Esso brand. In the OIMS era, these divisions had not measured up very well. Raymond traveled to London and complained to his British subordinates, "You guys are really great in poetry, but getting up every morning at 6:30 a.m. and saying, 'Okay, we are going to have the morning meeting. What's going on in the refineries?' That's just not in your skill set." He extrapolated the flaws he perceived at Esso to explain the enduring worldwide management weaknesses he saw at BP.